Hello, and welcome to another Osler Report, an audio series giving the Osler perspective on what we believe our clients need to know about developments in Canadian business law. In this report, we touch on some of the topics discussed in Osler's Capital Markets Review for 2010, which is available at www.osler.com. Doug Marshall, an Osler partner and co-chair of the Corporate Law Department, begins with his view on the chief developments of the year.
2010 was a good year for the Canadian capital markets. There was a robust level of activity in the M&A sector, and I would say a reasonable level of capital raising, including some successful initial public offerings. The availability of credit meant that huge headline-grabbing transactions were perhaps less frequent, but there was a high level of activity, particularly in the mid-market, which we generally define as transactions with a value of less than $250 million. And it's interesting that in 2010, over 90% of M&A transactions in Canada were completed in the mid-market.
Frank Turner, also co-chair of Osler's Corporate Law Department and a partner in the Calgary office.
In an uncertain credit environment, it's often easier to get financing for deals at $250 million and less, as opposed to transactions that require billions of dollars of financing. In addition, mid-market companies very often are private companies, which makes executing the transaction a little bit easier, as you don't have Securities Commission review and sometimes you don't need to have shareholder meetings or deal with multiple shareholders. 2010, I think, underscores the importance of the natural resources sector to the Canadian transactional environment, especially oil and gas and metals and mining. From a corporate finance perspective, energy issuers and metals and mining issuers had good success in the capital markets and were consistently highlighted as two of the sectors in which there was significant investor interest. Those sectors also drove a lot of M&A activity in the space, both in the mega deal and mid-market sector. And it was the natural resource sector that seemed to attract the bulk of foreign investment over the course of the year. In other cycles, different sectors were also quite prominent in the capital markets, and I don't think that was the case last year. The degree of foreign interest in acquiring natural resource assets was more prominent in 2010 than in other years.
There were successful foreign acquisitions in the natural resources sector, but unlike past years, these didn't necessarily involve acquisitions of entire companies, but often were structured as minority investments, which, of course, proved prescient given the potash transaction, which was an attempted acquisition of an entire company and, of course, was turned down by the federal government. I think we'll continue to see foreign investment in Canada generally and in our natural resources sector in particular. I think the potash transaction was a unique transaction on its facts. We had a minority federal government. We had a provincial government that was motivated to prevent the transaction from happening. And what's also important to remember, it was a hostile transaction. It may not have been completed in any event, with the bid price remaining below the market right to the end. There were a number of minority investment transactions completed in the natural resources space, and so I think we'll see continuing interest from countries such as China, Korea, and India in this area.
Foreign interest in the resource sector is coming principally from Asia. We saw a number of Chinese companies, many of whom were state-owned enterprises or sovereign wealth funds, acquire interests in the oil sands and in non-conventional energy assets in 2010. Korean companies were also reasonably active in the space, and we know that a number of Indian companies are looking at Western Canadian resource assets. I think we will see continuing investment by foreign investors in the natural resource sector, notwithstanding potash. Certainly, some foreign investors, such as sovereign wealth funds and other state-owned enterprises, are very focused on regulatory risk when deciding whether or not to pursue a particular opportunity. Certain types of investments, typically investments for minority interests, coupled with modest governance rights, around which there's a level of comfort that there won't be any regulatory intervention. So I think we will continue to see investments of that nature. Whether a foreign investor takes a run at a very prominent Canadian natural resource company or other enterprise I think those types of deals may be on hold pending greater clarification on the scope of potash.
As has traditionally been the case, cross-border transactions played a significant role in the M&A sector. Yet new, international trends are emerging.
There certainly were a very significant number of cross-border M&A deals in 2010. By some estimates, 50% of completed transactions had some cross-border component. But I think what's very interesting, and I think reflective of the strength of the Canadian capital markets, is that Canadian companies acquired or made foreign acquisitions at essentially double the rate that foreign acquirers made acquisitions in Canada.
In terms of the cross-border activity, there were certainly fewer notable U.S. acquisitions of Canadian companies in 2010, likely reflecting the weaker U.S. economy, but there were still a number of cross-border transactions that were completed as foreign acquirers from China, Korea, and other countries acquired Canadian assets and Canadian companies went shopping abroad.
On a year-over-year basis, non-U.S. foreign investment has been increasing by 6 or 7% per annum.
We think that the level of interest from non-U.S. foreign companies in the Canadian capital markets will continue in the year to come. As to whether it will ever exceed the amount of activity from the U.S., it's hard to predict. There are certainly or continue to be large pools of capital in the United States that are available, and undoubtedly with the improving U.S. economy, those pools of capital will be put to work, and it could well be that they'll be put to work in the Canadian capital markets.
Of course, M&A is only one component of the capital markets, and there were some interesting things on the corporate finance side of the equation as well in 2010. For example, after a very quiet preceding 2 years for IPOs, there was good IPO activity at the beginning of the year, and a number of us thought it could be a very, very strong year for IPOs, but a downturn in the economy in the third quarter combined with some fairly high-profile IPOs trading well off their issue price really chilled the market towards the end of the year. On the investor side, there's clearly a strong appetite in the Canadian capital markets for yield, and with the general demise of the income trust sector, high-yield debt securities look fairly attractive given that the coupon rate is substantially higher than what you would get with an investment-grade issue.
In the past, Canada had a vibrant income trust market, which was really created to satisfy that demand for yield. And now with the effectiveness of the tax regime that makes it difficult for income trust issuers to maintain their existence, we're seeing those investors who are looking to put yield in their portfolios purchasing high-yield debt securities. The high-yield debt market in Canada is pretty nascent in terms of its development. So I would expect to see that market increase in terms of the number of transactions. And of course, as we increase the number of transactions, there'll be a greater appetite for them, greater liquidity in the market, and that will just beget new transactions. We think it's going to be influenced by the U.S. market from a legal perspective, at least in terms of the covenant patterns that have been developed in the United States. We think we're going to see those coming to Canada. I don't think the high-yield debt market in Canada will ever exceed the volume of activity that we see in the United States. The United States is just a much bigger market, and for some very big issuers who aren't afraid of the U.S. regulatory regime, they'll likely continue to access the even more liquid market in the United States. But for other issuers, Canada will, I think, prove to be a very successful market.
We've talked about the companies that operate in the Canadian capital markets, both from an M&A and corporate finance standpoint. But it's also worth mentioning that shareholders were part of the story in 2010 as well. There were a number of instances where shareholders were quite active in either promoting what they viewed as a value-creating transaction or challenging the decision of a board of directors, and often looked to the courts as the forum to bring that challenge to the fore.
Canada remains a bidder-friendly environment, and the opportunity for shareholders to become involved at the corporate level and challenging boards of directors or seeking to hold shareholder meetings is relatively easy compared to some of the other Commonwealth jurisdictions. Layered on top of that is, of course, the fact that the number of defenses available to a board of directors in Canada is much more limited than, for example, in the United States. And the one area in particular that saw some activity in 2010 was in the area of poison pills, where we thought perhaps the regulators were softening their position and perhaps going to allow boards of directors to make more effective use of poison pills or shareholder rights plans towards the end of the year in the Lionsgate transaction. And then in a comment from the regulator in Ontario, we saw the regulatory analysis returning to a question of when the pill must go, not whether.
I'm optimistic about the capital markets in 2011. In some respects, we seem to be off to quite a good start, given that there's been a number of high-profile transactions announced, particularly in the mining sector. I do think that, like 2010, the M&A piece will be bigger than the corporate finance piece, but I am hopeful that we'll see more IPO activity in 2011 for issuers both in and outside of the natural resources sector, and I expect that there'll be more Canadian high-yield deals as the Canadian high-yield market opens up.
For 2011, we expect to see another solid year of M&A and corporate finance. Some are predicting a banner year, but that will likely depend on the state of the U.S. economy. I think if commodity prices remain high, we'll continue to see natural resources and metals and mining dominating the Canadian market. We also expect to see continuing activity in the financial services sector as our strong financial institutions with more certain capital requirements seek to expand their businesses. And as we noted, we expect to see the high-yield debt market in Canada grow ever bigger.
Canadian capital markets activity grew in 2010, and that growth is likely to continue. The Osler Capital Markets Review looks at a wide range of emerging developments, including the thriving mining sector, the growing role of litigation in M&A, shareholder activism, the increased power and responsibility of directors, and the IPO environment. To download the full review of capital markets in 2010, please visit us at www.osler.com and look for more Osler reports from Osler, Hoskin & Harcourt, LLP. Thanks for listening.